Jaya, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Madhavirabhi Gopala Shri Kuryat Kripaya Jali Tadaiva Sangaya Vidra Shri Krishna Krishna Chaitanya Sasanatana Rupaka Gopala Raghunatha Dham Prajapatima Panchakalpa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhyeva Cha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vanasthari Gaura Vanananda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. I'd like to read you something first from a purport to the fifth canto. Text 11 by Srila Prabhupada. He says that the struggle for existence, the attempt to counteract the onslaught of material nature, creates enmity in society. So nature, people are trying, they're struggling for existence, is a very difficult thing. People don't really mean sometimes to be nasty to somebody else, to be harsh. But because it's such a hard struggle for existence, it's dog-eat-dog, it creates enmity in society. And Prabhupada says, consequently, society is filled with envious people. One person is envious of another, and that is the way of the material world. Then he says, the Krishna consciousness movement aims at creating an atmosphere of non-envy. Of course, it's not possible for everyone to become Krishna conscious, but the Krishna conscious movement can create an exemplary society wherein there's no envy. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's some description given of the universal form of the Lord, the form of God that has everything within it, and how we can see each and every different element, thing, and person, place, as being part of God. And in the second chapter, second canto, sixth chapter, text 9, it describes that envy also has a place in the body of God. Interesting thing. It says it in the Sanskrit. Parimokshasya hingsaya. Hingsa means envy. Okay? Prabhupada translates this, listen carefully. The evacuating hole of the Lord is a place of envy. So in other words, if you're an envious person, it means you are not a very pleasant thing. Envy is also present there, but the purpose of this movement is to establish a society that's free from envy. But it's not such an easy thing. Srila Prabhupada wanted us to establish Vrindavan villages. Vrindavan villages means a place where there is no envy, where everyone coexists together in a mood of love and happiness. And that's done by keeping the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the center of everything. And then there's this joy in everything that we do, there's great happiness, and there's a lack of envy in such dealings. So this is one of the purposes of the society. Srila Prabhupada described in his purposes for ISKCON, one of them was to establish rural villages where people could come together and hear and chant. So ultimately, in one sense, our purpose, we want to go to Vrindavan, we want to create a Vrindavan, we want to go in that direction, and when we leave this world, we want to go to that eternal abode of Vrindavan. But there are some problems. We're a long ways away from Vrindavan. You can just decide that, yes, I'm in Vrindavan, I'm going to start there. But you can't start your journey in a place where you're not. If you want to go to Vrindavan, it means you have to start in Scotland. much as you may not appreciate Scotland or the weather. But you have to start here, because that's real. We can't just imagine, oh, I'm going to start at Radhakund. I'm going to start in Mathura or some place where I'm not present. And we have to start where we're at. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, our great acharya in our line, in the 1800s, he wrote two very interesting books. One called, well, many books, but two particularly I'm going to know. One's called Chaitanya Sikshamrita, and another is called Krishna Samhita. Both books, Krishna Samhita is Sanskrit and Bengali, and Chaitanya's Sikshamrita is largely Bengali. So, in these books, Bhaktivinoda Thakur does a great justice for all of us, a great service. He describes Krishna's pastimes, but he describes them in a way that they become relevant for us. Yesterday I was mentioning that the first time I came in contact with anything of Vedic culture, Indian culture, traditional culture about Krishna was about in 1971, 72. I was a young boy exploring an old abandoned house, and we saw some pictures there that some hippies or someone had put on the wall from Krishna book, pictures like we see on the walls here. And I was staring at them for hours, just trying to figure out, who is this personality? It's a very difficult thing. So Krishna is a person, the spiritual world is a place, just as we're persons. If we try to say that we have personality and we have form, but God doesn't, it means that God has problems. It means he's not really God. It means that somehow I'm better than God. Because wouldn't we all really like to have personality and form? If we just took away your form and we just stuck your spirit essence inside of a bottle or threw it up in the sky, how would life be? You couldn't interact with anyone, you couldn't do anything. We want, we naturally understand that there should be interactions with other persons. So Krishna also has a form. He has a supreme form, a form that is the source of all other different forms. And so the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam is a very wonderful scripture because it describes Krishna's activities. We hear in many different religious books that there's a God. And sometimes people draw pictures of him, he's sitting in the clouds and he's got a big thunderbolt or something. He's, yeah, I'm going to let that guy have it. Or sometimes people think of him as a bakery. And he bakes bread. Sometimes he bakes wheat bread, or sometimes pumpernickel bread, or rye bread, because that's his job, is to make bread for everyone. But that's, how is that really God? The conception of God, or Bhagavan, a better word, in Vedic culture in India, is so very, very rich and so very, very deep. And the whole culture of India is revolving around that. If you go to Orissa, you'll see Pattachitra art, a particular style of art, which is all based around Krishna, Krishna's pastimes. If you go to Rajasthan, you'll see the kind of Rajasthani art they do there. Every place in India has particular painting, particular music, particular dance, and all of those cultures, all those beautiful cultures, are all based on God consciousness. When we speak about art, art comes from God. If you speak about music, where does the word music come from? In the Christian tradition, it's said that when Moses met God on Mount Sinai, God spoke to him. Moses heard the voice of God. And what did God first say to him? He said, Muzak. Listen, Moses. Muzak. And from that beautiful voice of God, saying Muzak, came the word music. In that sense, music means the voice of God. And art, in all of its different forms, is meant to connect us. It's meant to take us to God. So we'd like to try to do a little art form today, which is called Krishna Katha or Hari Katha. And it's a form of kind of storytelling and philosophy and some art mixed together, sometimes a little music. And we'd like to speak something about this land of Vrindavan And we'd like to say something about one of the obstacles to attaining that abode of Vrindavan. According to the tradition of India, the ancient scriptures, where Krishna came 5,000 years ago, and he performed so many amazing feats. When he was 7 years old, he lifted a mountain over downhill. He was speaking about that. And he killed so many terrible demons. He saved his devotees in so many ways. Technically, these pastimes have been divided by our acharyas into two broad categories, known as naimittic lila and nitya lila. Nitya means eternal. And those are pastimes which are always going on in the spiritual world. But there's also naimittic lila, or occasional pastimes. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur has analyzed the different occasional pastimes in Braj. And he said these pastimes, which are literal history, which happened and are still happening in a transcendental way in different dimensions to this very moment, they also are allegorical. And each one of these naimittic leelas represents an obstacle for us on our journey, because we're all pilgrims. It represents obstacles on our journey to our eternal home, that village of Vrindavan. So one of the obstacles, the 10th obstacle, is Kaliya Damana Leela. And we'd like to say a little something about that today. And some of its ramifications, very practical ramifications, very practical lessons for our personal growth, and also to help us to establish Vrindavan villages, or places that are free from envy. Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes in Bengali, please be a little patient with me, I'll read a little Bengali to you. He says that Kaliya Damana Abhiman Kalata Para Pakarita Jive Doyasunyata Durikarana Kurata. He says that this pastime, it represents different obstacles in our personal development, things which are going to block us from attaining Vrindavan, from establishing a Vrindavan village. And the first thing he says is Abhiman. Abhiman means some conceit, some pride, some conception of one's self-importance. And we spoke about this yesterday with Indra and his problem, and how Indra wanted to be the big man. So Abhiman is the first thing. Kalata. Kalata means wickedness. We have some wickedness in our hearts. Sometimes he's a nice man, and a girl falls in love with him, because he's such a good man. He has so many good qualities. But there's also some kalata. There's some wickedness in his heart. And that wickedness comes out sometimes after a while. He starts drinking a lot, and maybe he starts beating his wife. But he's actually a good guy in so many different ways. And that's why she appreciated him. But he has some wickedness. And as long as we have that wickedness in our heart, if we don't drive that out, there's going to be an obstacle. An obstacle, again, both in our personal development and in our development of proper villages. So the third thing he mentions is para-pakarita. Para-pakarita means someone who wants to hurt other people. We have the word paropakara. Paropakara means someone who's neglects themselves, and they just want to help other people. They have no selfishness. But the opposite of that is parapakara. And parapakara means someone who wants to hurt other people. And this is a representative of this pastime. Before we begin to tell the story, I want to say something philosophical as kind of a foundation to understand the story. The third thing is krurata. Krurata means cruelty. The fourth thing is jive doya sunyata. When someone has no compassion for the living entities. And the fifth thing is durikarana. Durikarana means to be very distant, to remove oneself from everything else, to keep away from other people in a good way. So this is Kaliya Damana Lila. Now those seem like big words, but try to understand the Sanskrit language contains so many deep meanings within the language. Language is a kind of vessel which carries consciousness, which carries culture within it. One of the things people that they say the World Bank and other people are trying to do today to destroy culture is to try to establish English as a worldwide language. English is a very good language if you want to make money. Prabhupada, he once said that English is very good if you want to make money. And he said that French is very good for talking to girls. And he said a few things. And he said that Bengali and Sanskrit, those are languages for talking to God. And there's so many different, to give you an example, there's so many different words for love. Sneha man pranaya rag anurag bhav rudamahabhav adiwudamahabhav madanatyam madanatyamahabhav. So many different words, priti. So many different words in the Sanskrit and Bengali languages for love. Because it's different stages, different types of love. So let's examine a few of these words for a minute. Be patient with me. The word damana. Damana means to tame or subdue, to overpower something. A second meaning is to be self-controlled, self-restrained. That's the meaning of the word damana. What does the word kaliya mean? Kaliya in Sanskrit is a compound word. Two words, kala, and the suffix iya. Iya means something which belongs to. We have the word, you may be familiar with, Gaudiya. It means someone who belongs to Gaudadesh. It's Gaudiya. So we have the same suffix, iya. So kala has a number of different meanings. I'll mention five different meanings of kala. Kala means black. Kala means also a kind of black poisonous snake. Kala also means abuse, censure, or defamation, or criticize. Kala also means night. And kala means iron. So that personality who has all these qualities of kala, he's known as Kaliya. Kali iti kaliya, we would say in Sanskrit. That person who is a very black snake and very, very poisonous and is full of the propensity to criticize and defame everyone else. So this is a wonderful pastime. I'm going to read you a few Sanskrit verses also about it. Please be patient. In the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Narad Muni, he spoke about this Kaliya Damana Lila to the devotee Gopal Kumar. And Narad Muni told him in the beginning of his discussion, he said, this is not an easy thing for me to talk about. Yavai vihara janikali yasya hridaya sodata yasya tasya tam smartam isho nabhavani shoka prahasya vegat katam alatani. He said that pastime, the son of Mother Yashoda, Krishna, that he enjoyed in the lake of Kaliya, disturbs me so much. It brings me both great happiness, and it also brings me, prahasa means joy, happiness, but at the same time, it also brings me great shok, or great lamentation, sorrow. I can't even bear to think about it. How can I recount this to you? So this pastime is a very wonderful pastime. And it has many deep purports to it that you perhaps haven't really thought about before. It's described in the 16th chapter of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And the 13th verse there says that Dina Ramena, one morning without Balaram, without his elder brother, Krishna went to herd the cows. Why does it particularly mention Dina Ramena? And this same pastime, which is found in many Vedic scriptures like Vishnu Purana and Harivamsa Purana, and many other different literatures. Again and again, it's mentioned there, Vina Ramena, without Balaram. Why? What was so significant about Balaram not being there? Balaram is Krishna's elder brother. He's Adi Guru, the original Guru. So this is a question I'm going to put before us, and we'd like to try to address this later on. And you'll see the question is going to become a little more evolved also. It's described that within Vrindavan, the Jamuna River is like the life of Vrindavan. Just as water is life for everyone, so it's said that Shiva Jalasaya, the life of Vrindavan, was the Jamuna River. We all depend upon water. And many people, they speak about this pastime of Kaliya Damana Leela to also evoke some sense of our responsibility in taking care of the environment and how the Jamuna was polluted. Water is our life. Water is such a very, very important thing. We were watching an amazing documentary a few days ago called Schooling the World. Highly recommended. And they interviewed some elderly ladies in Bhutan. And they were saying how when they were growing up, it was such an important part of their life to protect the water, the streams and things that went near their house. And they very carefully would keep the streams clean. But today, when the children are, I'll put this in quotes, educated, because they're going to these Western schools, they don't give a damn about the water. And they're throwing so much garbage and trash and things, and the water is becoming destroyed. So what is real education? That's another question. So the Jamuna River is the life of Vrindavan. And there was one terrible, terrible snake living in the Jamuna. Some philosophers and historians have suggested that perhaps this Kaliya, this snake, is the source of the legends around the world of dragons. Because Kaliya was just like a dragon. He had many, many heads. He had thousands of heads, according to the Bhagavatam and different literatures. He was black. He was extremely poisonous. And it's said that within 8 miles of either side of the Jamuna, all the trees were dead. Any birds that would fly over the Jamuna River at that place, they would fall down dead. No one could survive within 8 miles of the Jamuna River. And our Acharya, Kavi Kanyapuri, is Ananda Vrindavan Champu, he says, Jamunaya Hidroga, that Kaliya was like a heart disease in the Jamuna. And all the Brijbasis, they knew about the presence of Kaliya. Kaliya was so terrible. It's said that even the fish and crocodiles, they couldn't stay in that lake. And when we say lake, the word hrada is used. Hrada is also a very significant word. Hrada has the same bij dhatu in Sanskrit grammar as hrida. Hrida means the heart. So this is like the heart. And this pastime of Kaliya Damana Leela refers to subduing defamation, criticism in our own heart, our own hrida, because it's a great obstacle on our path to Vrindavan. The entire lake there is said, Bishanara Vilasa Yagner, Dhumena Parivestitam. Dhuma means smoke. And if you see, if you read a little Hindi, sometimes you'll see them in the trains and buses, Dhumpan Nishade. No smoking. Dhum means smoke. So that entire Kaliya Hrada, that lake, was full of fire and smoke that came from that snake's poison. And everyone was keeping away from that Jamuna River. And Mother Yashoda, she knew that Krishna was a very mischievous boy, because that's the nature of boys. They're very wild and mischievous. Is that correct? Yes, she knows. Nima, is that true? Yeah, boys are very mischievous and nothing. Okay. Right from the horse's mouth. Okay. So she called him aside one day, just like your mother takes you aside sometimes in your mind and tells you, don't go over there in that place. Did she ever tell you that? Don't go out on the road and do this or that. Yes? So Mother Yashoda, she also told Krishna, she said, Gopal, you can go anywhere you want in Vrindavan, taking care of your cows. There's only one place you don't go. Don't go to Kaliya Hrada, that terrible place where the poisonous snake Kaliya resides. Krishna, just like a lot of young boys, says, okay, Mom, sure, whatever you say. And he nodded his head, yes. And then Krishna immediately went to see his brother Balaram. Because Balaram is also his authority, Balaram has a very important task. He's the older brother. Nimai, it's an important job to be an older brother. Yes, very, very responsible post. So he went to Balaram and he said, you know, Mom, Mother told me that I can't go to Kaliya Hrada. It's very difficult. What can I do? And Krishna was trying to explain to Balaram. He said, you know, we're taking care of the cows, and these cows, they want to go so many different places. And what if the cows want to go to Kaliya Hrada? And Balaram just interrupted Krishna. He said, look, I understand. You want to go to Kaliya Hrada. And Balaram said, okay, you can go. He said, but don't go in the water. And Krishna smiled. He said, okay, I won't do that. Don't worry. And so that morning, Vina Ramena, without Balaram, Krishna set out with the cows and the cowherd boys to find a nice place for the cows to graze. And that day, he said it was a very hot day. And so the cows were looking for some water, and they were going here and there. And they saw in the distance some place where there was some green grass. And so the cows went to that place, and because of the heat of the sun, they became thirsty. And the cows went and they drank water from the Jamuna. But as soon as the cows drank that water from the Jamuna, the cows fell over dead. And so meanwhile, the boys, they were coming along behind. They didn't know what had happened. And they were singing and dancing and having a good time. As we were mentioning the other day, this is community. Community means to empower our children. And whereas in the West, as you were mentioning, our children never grow up. We have this idea that we have to just let them play and play and play, and life is just all about play, and they never really grow up. Life's a party. Whereas in third world countries and other places, you'll see that young children, at the age of 5 or 6 years old, they're given a stick and they're told to take care of the cows. They're doing something. I remember when I was about 9 years old, I got my first job. It was a paper route, delivering newspapers. And when I made my first money, it was a real big thing for me. The first thing I did, I went to the store. I didn't know much about buying things, but I bought a frozen pie. And I took it to my mother, and I was so proud because I wanted to contribute something. And there's happiness in that. To be able to contribute. And children get happiness with that. Not just to play forever and ever. Of course they're going to play. You can't stop them from playing. They'll play no matter what. But they should also be given some good feeling about themselves, that I'm contributing, I'm doing something. And so the boys were taking care of the calves, and they were at the same time playing. And they had different flutes and bugles and musical instruments, and they were dancing and singing as they were going through the forest, going after the cows, because that was their service. Everyone in a community has some service to take care of something. And one very important service is to take care of the animals. And especially in Vedic culture, the importance is stressed on the cows. Because the cows are such a wonderful, amazing creature, every aspect of the cow is useful. Even the stool of the animal is a wonderful thing for fertilizer. It said an interesting thing, that it's very hard for vegetarians and vegans to get enough vitamin B12. But you know an interesting thing? If you put your hands in the earth, and you're working the earth with your hands, and there's some cow stool in the earth, that vitamin B12 will come to the pores of your skin and your body in a natural way, without taking any shots or pills or whatever like that. The cows are so very, very important. In Vedic culture, the urine of the animal is good. The urine of the cow is good for so many different things. They use it for so many different types of medicine. The stool is used for fertilizer. They use it for cooking. And it gives a very nice fragrance when you're using it to cook. The village people do this quite often. Everything, every aspect of the cow is useful. And what to speak of the milk, and the cream, and the ghee, and different things which are gotten from it. Unfortunately, today, the milk industry is not very nice. We don't like to speak about that. But interesting thing we found recently, that there's two different types of milk. There's A1 milk and there's A2 milk. I don't know if you're aware of this. A2 milk comes from traditional breeds of cows. A1 milk comes from these cows that they've bred in an artificial way for so many generations. And A1 milk is practically indigestible for anyone. But A2 milk is very naturally digestible. In Vedic culture, there wasn't such a horrific situation like we have in the West today where they kill the cows. People took care of the cows. The cow was like a family member. And when the cow stopped giving milk, they took care of it. They just loved it. And so the boys had a very important service. They were taking care of the cows. And they felt very good about themselves. Because this is their service for the community and to please Krishna. Because Krishna loves the cows so much. Cows are very, very simple creatures. I remember once I saw a cow that had been hit by a car. And it's a very sad thing. If you see a dog get hit by a car, if you see a monkey or some other creature get hit by a car, the creature starts screaming and making all kinds of noise. But the cow just becomes very quiet. Because, we would say in Sanskrit, they're very sattvic. They're very much in the mode of goodness. They don't complain. They'll hide their pain to themselves. They just go and sit down in some place. And you don't see their suffering. So anyway, the boys were taking care of those cows. And so in great happiness, they're singing and dancing and they're coming along. And then they came to the bank of the Jamuna. And much to their horror, they found all the cows laying on the ground dead. So the Bhagavatam describes that what did the boys do at that time? They drank the water. Now, you may ask, if it's such a horrible disaster, why are they thinking of their own thirst? You'd think that they wouldn't be interested in drinking, rather they'd lament about the cows. No, there's a reason. Our Acharya's Jiva Goswami has commented that the boys drank the water because they wanted to kill themselves. They wanted to commit suicide because we failed. We failed to take care of these wonderful creatures. The cows is a part of our family. This is our duty. And how can we face Krishna and try to tell Krishna that we didn't perform our duty properly? And so the boys, they drank that water and they fell over dead. Now different acharyas have given commentaries about this, so many different commentaries on this story. I can touch on a couple of them. In a book called Bhavartha Deepika, which is written by the great acharya Sridhar Swami, and he wrote this in Orissa, by the way, where we come from. Sridhar Swami says that actually the boys were eternal associates of the Lord, and there's no question of them dying. It's just some external thing. Sanatana Goswami, in his commentary called Brihad Vaishnava Toshin, he says that they lost consciousness by the divine will of the Lord. It was Krishna's arrangement. Jiva Goswami, in his Lagu Vaishnava Toshin commentary, he says they were all unconscious by the will of Lord Maya. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he says that Yoga Maya, or the Lord's internal potency, covered their life air. But otherwise, the boys were eternal. So Krishna came. He was following along behind the boys. He didn't know what was going on either. And he's also singing and dancing and playing his flute. And then he came and he saw the scene in front of him. All the cows lying dead, and the boys lying there dead. Jiva Goswami describes the words of Krishna at that time. Yagamava kalu devata brajasadam asmakam uchaishtaram vibalascha sadaiva jivatulitastevi vipanapura hahanda swayam asmita sahachara kim brataramataram tatam saiva janam cha vachmi mama dik chapal yata sampasam. Krishna said, these cows, these residents of Vrindavan, these are like the gods. Cows are so important. And the boys, these are my wife. I love these boys so much. What should I do? I'm their only life. And Krishna said to himself, Kim brataram mataram tatam. What am I going to say to their mothers? Could you imagine, Eman, if you were playing with some of your friends and some terrible thing happened to your friends? How are you going to go and tell their mother? A very terrible thing. Krishna said, what can I do? I'm so impulsive. We should know. Sadhava hridayam mayam sadhanam hridayam taham mananyatena janati naham tebyo managapi. The Bhagavatam describes that for the devotees, Krishna is their life. Krishna is in everyone's heart, but he as the super soul. But Srila Bhaktisiddhanta comments on this verse. He says, who is the super soul? The super soul. Did you know the super soul has a super soul? Super soul means the God in the heart of everyone. But who is inside the heart of the super soul? He says the devotees are the super soul of the super soul. The devotees are in the heart of Krishna. So Krishna saw the situation and his heart melted and Krishna began to lament. His lips became moist and Krishna began to cry. Same situation. And Jiva Goswami, he says that Krishna's tears fell down like drops of nectar and they revived those boys. This reminded me of another very philosophical discussion which I think you might find interesting in a wonderful book called Paramatma Sandarbha by Jiva Goswami. And he describes there the nature of suffering. Dukkhanubhava nama yantakarane dukkhasparsha. That you understand suffering when suffering touches your heart. And there's some utility for suffering. When a woman gives birth to a child, I don't know what it's like, but I've heard it's the most intense pain that one can experience. That's a very difficult thing. You may say, what is the utility of that? What is the benefit of going through that pain? But there is some utility. Because once a woman has given birth, she can understand the pain another woman is going through. If your husband or if your wife have left you, if someone has abused you and you've suffered, there's some benefit in that. Because in that suffering lies some experience that we have that I can share. It gives me some empathy for other people who are going through the same situation. Now, Jiva Goswami, he describes what is real happiness? Because if you want to know what is suffering, then what is real happiness? Yatu bhaktanam sukham tatasya bhakti upameva. That real happiness, the word suk means happiness. Real happiness comes from bhakti. Bhakti means love. Bhakti means divine devotion. It's the happiness of the heart. Happiness comes from that. Happiness comes when we can go to Mangal Arati. Happiness comes when we can associate with the devotees. We can be in kirtan. We can associate in a very intimate way in our sangha. He says, but tatate sham dukkam cha bhagavat prapt antarayanayava bhavati tapcha charika bhagavat eva chitra vidakta jayate sa cha bhakti evati. Now what happens if you can't do that bhakti? You want to engage in devotional activities with your heart. But maybe you broke your leg. Radhanath Maharaj is coming to Karuna Bhavan, but you broke your leg and you can't attend the programs, you have to stay in the hospital. Life's bad. So then you're lamenting. You're feeling very, very depressed. But in spite of that depression, that unhappiness, Krishna says, if someone continues with their devotional activities, I'm not going to stop. Okay, I am in the hospital, I can't go to the program, I'd like to be there with this great saint, but I can't do that. Then still, I'm going to continue. I'll chant here, I'll pray here, I'm not going to give up. And if someone has that attitude, then something happens first of all to Krishna. And tatra-charika bhagava-eva chitta-dhrita-jayate. Krishna's heart melts. When Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, God, when he sees that the devotee is so determined, they're not going to stop. They want to know, what is the meaning of my life? Why am I here? Where is real happiness? And they're not going to stop pursuing their spiritual path. Then at that time, God's heart melts. And when God's heart melts, sa bhaktir evati. When Krishna's heart melts, that becomes bhakti. That becomes our bhakti. When we go through the suffering and the difficulties. So this happened. Krishna was there with the boys. The boys had all fallen dead, drinking the water. And Krishna's heart melted. And he began to cry. And those, his heart, his personified love for those boys, came out of his eyes in the form of tears. And those tears fell on the boys. And the boys regained external consciousness. And those boys who weren't directly in front of him, some because there's thousands of boys there, some of them are some distance away, they didn't all regain consciousness at the same time. Because Krishna is so wonderful. It's the nature of the spiritual world. Krishna wanted to have a personal exchange with each boy because it was such a big drama. The boys died. So with each boy, one at a time, Krishna embraced them and would hold each other and look at each other, and the boys would start crying in happiness, and Krishna would start crying in happiness. And similarly, Krishna revived the cows, and then all the cows, they began to move, and they began licking Krishna's body again and again. So, a question comes also at this point. Why is it that this Kaliya, we say in Bengali and Hindi, that Kaliya is a badmash, a great rascal. If he's such a badmash, such a rascal, such a demoniac creature, why is it that Krishna didn't drive him out previously? And some different answers are there. One answer is given is because Kaliya, and ladies who are married here, you may think you have it tough with your husband, but try to imagine what it's like for Kaliya's wives. You're married to a black snake who's so poisonous, balls of fire come out of his mouth, and a very difficult husband. And he saw Krishna saw that Kaliya's wives were actually very saintly, and they were great devotees. So that was the hope for Kaliya. That's also the hope for some of us husbands, that we have a saintly wife. So Krishna became very angry when he saw what Kaliya had done. Krishna wants everyone in Vrindavan to be full of happiness. There should be no anxieties or stress or anything there. But Kaliya enters into Vrindavan in the form of criticism and harshness, fault-finding, and Krishna can't tolerate that. And what happens when that mood enters into our community, then people die, just like the boys died. So Krishna became very angry, but he didn't show that anger to the boys. Krishna said, hey, Bandhu, hey, my friends, just look. He said, this black snake Kaliya, he's living in this lake, and because of his presence, all everything's become poisonous. The birds flying overhead, they fall down dead. And he said, you see, there's this tree over here. Just wait here for a minute. climb up in the tree just to see what's going on there. So you just wait here. And so then Krishna climbed to the top of that Kadamba tree. And you may know something about this tree. Trees are also very, very special in Vedic culture. They're actually worshipped and appreciated. Sometimes in the West, we think, oh, these people, these third world countries, they're very backward because they worship mountains and they worship trees and rivers and spirits, and this is all nonsense. Where are these things at? Well, you'll be hard-pressed, to be frank, to prove the presence of some personalities in these trees or rivers or mountains. But one thing that I marked, one sociologist, we were reading some comments from him, and he was saying that he grew up in Canada, and where he grew up, the whole community was based on logging and cutting down trees. And they considered that trees are just some renewable thing, and the purpose of trees is just to cut them down. And actually, we're doing a great favor for the forest by planting new trees because the old forests are not good. That was his idea. And he said, I had some friends who were local Indians, Native American Indians living in the place. And to them, they saw the forests as spirits, and they saw gods there. He said, I don't know, the sociologist said, if what they're saying is true or not. He said, but look at the difference in the results. We've cut all the trees down with my paradigm of thought. Whereas theirs, you may consider it to be backward, but they live in harmony with nature, and things go on in such a very beautiful way. So this Kadamba tree is very special. It said this Kadamba tree is still there today in Braj. I visited it many times. It's there in the Vrindavan Parikrama Marg, going around Vrindavan, very, very ancient trees, say 5,000 years old, where Krishna climbed. Now how is it that all the other trees around it died because of the poison, but not that tree? According to different acharyas, Prabhupada mentions that when Krishna touched the tree with his feet, the tree came back to life. And other people, Prabhupada also mentions that Garuda, the winged carrier of Krishna, we have Garuda out here, he almost got hit by a tree. He saved himself. Garuda, he steals some amrit or nectar from the demigods. And one drop of that amrit, when he landed on that tree, one drop of that amrit landed on the tree and kept that tree alive. Other people say the tree was just waiting and kept itself alive because he knew Krishna was going to come. So Krishna climbed up in that tree and he decided he was going to have some jala krida lila, some fun pastimes in the water. Because life's good if you die. It's not just hanging out in the cloud and in the sky, keeping track of how many people eat bread and whatever, and all the mistakes that everybody does sometimes. So Krishna decided he's going to have some fun. And Krishna tied his belt tightly around his waist. He pulled his hair back and tied it in a knot. And then he turned to the boys and he raised his fist in a symbol of victory. And then Krishna, he jumped into the Jamuna River, just like a kingfisher bird, I'm describing, dives into a river and catches a fish. Just before Krishna jumped in, he turned to his friends and he said, my dear friends, don't be afraid. It's okay. I'll be all right. He said, but maybe you should all stand back a little ways. Mm-hmm. And the boys were a little shocked. Krishna jumped into the river. And because Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in his original form, and in that form of God, all the different universes, everything resides in the body of Krishna. When he jumped into the river, suddenly the water rose up in a huge wave, 20 feet high. The poisonous water started rushing toward the land. And the boys became a little frightened. And they all ran back. So, at that time, Kaliya was wondering, what's going on? Who's coming into my abode? How dare someone make all this noise? And he came up and he saw there was a beautiful, beautiful boy. Kaliya said, oh, he's worth looking at. And that boy, he was smiling. Krishna was smiling. As he was swimming around in the river. So it said that Fana Sahasra, that Kaliya had 1,000 heads. And just as we were mentioning, some people say he's the origin of the dragon. Balls of fire would come out of the mouths of Kaliya. This is a tradition, very ancient story in India. And you'll see, I don't think you have any paintings in here, no, of Kaliya down in Alila, but there's so many wonderful paintings and also dance to do with Kaliya down in Alila with this pastime. So, one of the names for Kaliya, Jiva Goswami and Lalu Vaishnav Toshin, he calls Kaliya Chakshu Shrava. That Chakshu Shrava is a name for a snake. Chakshu means the eyes, and Shrava means to hear. It means a creature that hears through its eyes. In other words, it has no ears, it just perceives through the eyes. And snakes, if you're walking through the jungle, which I've done in a lot of different third world countries, and you're worried about the snakes, a good way to go is just to walk heavily. The snakes, they feel that, and they don't want trouble. They'll go away, generally. So, Kaliya had no ears. And this is also symbolic, because persons who are snake-like persons, they can't hear good advice. They just depend on seeing everything. In America, there's a saying in Missouri, I think it is, they call it the show-me state. It says, seeing is believing. For low-class people, they just demand to see everything. But a high-class person can take some instruction, some wisdom, through hearing from a wiser person. But someone who's very, very low-class, they don't want to hear from anyone. They just depend on their own senses. I want to see it myself. Otherwise, I don't believe it. And that such a person is like a snake. So Kaliya, he saw the beauty of Krishna. Krishna had some yellow garments on. He was very, very delicate. His body was shining like a white cloud. His chest had a mark of Srivats on the golden smile. He was smiling very beautifully. His eyes looked like lotus flowers. But despite his wonderful appearance, Kaliya was so envious and so furious, it said that Kaliya bit Krishna on the chest and he coiled himself around Krishna. The boys were watching all of this, standing on the bank of the river. And they thought, my God, what is this? Are we awake? Are we dreaming? Have we fainted? They couldn't understand. They became so shocked. They didn't know, are we dreaming? Am I alive? Am I dead? How is it possible? So Kaliya thought that he would crush Krishna with his coils. So he wrapped around Krishna's body. And the Brahmavivarta Purana even states that Kaliya swallowed Krishna up. And Krishna became like a burning rod of iron inside the belly of Kaliya. And Kaliya had to vomit him out again. It's described in Vishnu Purana and Hadivamsa Purana that so many snakes, they were the family members of Kaliya. Just like snake-like persons, they also like to associate with other similar persons of similar nature. So in that Kaliya Raga, that lake, which is like a, not exactly a lake, but a wide part of the Jamuna River, which is very, very deep. In that Kaliya Raga, there were thousands and thousands of snakes, and Kaliya was the leader of all of them. And all of them began to bite Krishna. And Kaliya, he was wondering to himself, who is this Krishna? He said, I've heard about him. He killed my friend, Agasura. Agasura is another great snake demon who looked like a cave. And all the boys went inside of his mouth and Krishna went in and killed him. But due to his envy, Kaliya couldn't recognize Krishna. And it said that Krishna was adrishtachetam. Adrishtachetam means he didn't move. And everyone, all the cowherd boys who saw this, they became full of lamentation. And they began to cry and cry. So I'd like to stop just for 5 minutes, okay? Have a little break. And then we're going to come back, and I want to tell you a very amazing thing that happened after this. Okay? It's highly suggested you at least stand up. We can all just sit up. Please, everybody stand up. You can feet up on your tippy-toes like this. Stretch your arms. Okay, and then very loudly, it's really the most important part of it. Okay, everyone all together. Go! Krishna Nama Ghee, which is nice, like a very nice fragrant butter. You take the Rama Nama Lada, the Krishna Nama Ghee, the Hari Nama Kandakira. Kandakira means like sweet rice. The name of Lord Hari is like sweet rice. And Gori Gori means that you mix them all together and pee. You drink it. So, we'll sing this. Rama Nama Lada, Krishna Nama Ghee Bolo. Hari Nama Kandakira, Gori Gori Pi. Hari Nama Kandakira, Gori Gori Pi. Hari speaking about how Krishna was in the coils of this terrible snake, and Kaliya was biting him on the chest, wrapping his coils around him. There are so many different commentaries on this pastime. We sometimes speak about this pastime for 6 or 8 days, 2 or 3 hours in a session. It's a very big subject. It's an interesting point. In the commentaries, they say different things, but there's one acharya, Sanatana Goswami, in his commentary called Brihad Vaishnava Toshini. He gives a little different explanation. He says that Kaliya, when he was biting Krishna, he was actually kissing him. And when he was wrapping his coils around Krishna, he was actually embracing him. Now, I remember one Sanskrit scholar that I spoke with about this. He rubbed his head and said, I have no idea. He said, none of the other commentaries say like this. Where did he get this idea from? Just mark it. I'm putting that in the ether. We'll come back to this point a little bit later. So the boys, when they saw the situation of Krishna, the boys became mortified. They thought Krishna is dead. And they went running back to see Mother Yashoda. And it's described in different literatures what happened at that time. At that time, throughout Vrindavan, many, many different inauspicious omens took place. There are literatures this day in India which describe different means of different omens. If you see a deer cross your path going to the right, that's considered to be very auspicious. Some good things going to happen. If you saw that in the morning and you see somebody carrying a bucket full of water, that's a very auspicious omen. Certain birds are good omens, certain birds are bad omens. And in Braj, there's three different types of omens. Those in the earth, those in the sky, and those in the bodies of living entities. And in Braj at this time, all three these types of omens manifested in a very inauspicious way. The left eye of the men began to blink, to twitch, which is considered to be an inauspicious omen. Whereas the right eye of the ladies begin to twitch. Men and women have a hard time getting along. It's just the opposite between men and women. When the left eye of a man twitches, that's inauspicious. And the right eye of a woman twitches, that's considered inauspicious. The left side of the bodies of the men begin to twitch. And there were meteorites they saw in the sky at that time. There were some earthquakes and all types of different inauspicious omens. And all the Brijbasis were living, and when they saw all these omens, they became very, very frightened. Because everyone loves Krishna. And the Brijbasis were immediately thinking, something happened to Krishna. Mother Yashoda became very upset. Right? Balaram, you didn't go with Krishna today? Right? Vina Ramena, Krishna went out without Balaram. You should have been watching him. Where is Krishna gone? Oh my gosh. Right? So, all the cowherd people of Braj, they were about to die from anxiety. To relieve their anxiety, Jiva Goswami says that Krishna, he sent a telepathic email message to one elderly Brijbasi who was there. And he inspired him to go and tell the Brijbasis what was going on. And if Krishna hadn't ordered him like that, that old man wouldn't have had the strength to make it back to Braj on his own. Krishna chose that old man because if an old man comes and says something to us, we tend to take it seriously. There's some message from him. If it's a small child, we're not really sure. Maybe they're just making something up or something. But it was an elderly person. So all the Brijbasis, seeing all these different frightening omens, they were panicking and leaving to find Krishna. And when they came outside the village, that old messenger met them. The Brijbasis were thinking that maybe Krishna had died. There's a wonderful book called Sri Krishna Vijay, which is written in Bengali language, by Gunaraj Khan, a famous book in our tradition. And the book also describes his pastime. In each one of these different literatures, sometimes the pastime is a little different. Just from a scholarly point of view, you may ask, how is it that the account, the story is a little different? Our acharyas have described that because these pastimes manifest in the heart of the devotees, they're called lila spurti. The spurti means that they actually see them in their heart because of their chanting, their purity of mind. And the pastimes take place in a little different ways to different devotees. In the book Chaitanya Bhagavat, Vrindavan Das Thakur says, Jai Rupa Chinti Dasi Sevi Pohoi. That according to the mood of a devotee, they'll see the pastime in a particular way. So in Sri Krishna Vijay, Gunaraj Khan, he says that the boys, they came running back to Vrindavan, and they came before Mother Yashoda and Rohini, Krishna's two mothers. What are they going to say? He said, Mata, please listen to this. And the boys were crying and shaking, and they told him, this morning we went to the Jamuna with our calves, and we were very thirsty, and we drank water. The water was poisonous from Kaliya, and we drank, and we died. And then your Gopal, Krishna, he came, and he brought us back to life. But then after that, he told us just to wait for one moment. He was going to climb a tree. We didn't know what he was going to do next. He climbed on top of the tree. He tied his hair back. He fixed his turban. He tied a cloth tightly around his waist. And suddenly in front of us, Krishna, he jumped into the Jamuna, where Kaliya was. And then we saw the terrible Kaliya snake come out of the Jamuna river. And he bit Krishna on the chest. And his coils wrapped around Krishna. And the Jamuna river was full of blood. And Krishna wasn't moving. And that's all that we saw. But Mata, Mother, we're sure Krishna's dead. Because so much blood in the river, we're sure that Krishna's no more. And the boys began to cry and cry. So, at that time, all the Vrijbasis became mad in anxiety. All the Vrijbasis, except for one, Balaram, he was laughing and smiling. And there's so many explanations, commentaries on this. Why is Balaram smiling? Balaram was seeing, he saw the anguish that the Vrijbasis, the residents of that village of Vrindavan were in. And Balaram thought to himself, they're all ready to die out of concern for Krishna. If I try to stop them, they won't listen to me. If I try to speak something and they're not going to listen, I'm also suffering some pain from this. But I can't say anything to stop. So the best thing is if I just smile and laugh. And then that will make them feel a little bit better. And when the Vrijbasis, they saw Balaram just smiling and laughing, they did. Indeed, their life stayed in their bodies. Their life there. They didn't die at that time. Another explanation is given, the reason why Balaram smiled and laughed. Because you see, Balaram, his first manifestation, Balaram manifests himself in different ways. God expands himself into so many different forms, different Vishnu avatars that you see in the back picture there, Mahavishnu, so many different forms of God coming from him. So also Balaram is one of those forms. And one of Balaram's first forms is a great snake, which is known as Anantasesh. And the Lord sleeps, it's said, on the back of Anantasesh. You see Anantasesh in many, many paintings, especially with Vishnu. And so Balaram at that time, he laughed because he was thinking, Krishna never plays with my form as Anantasesh, but now he's playing with this insignificant worm, Kaliya. But he doesn't play with me. And Balaram just laughed like this. So at that time, all the Brijbasis, they started running out of the house. And Balaram then, he stayed back. And he told his mother, Rohini, don't go. You stay here. And everyone else left. Now this is another mystery. Why did Balaram stay back a little later? Everyone else went ahead. Balaram was the last one to come when the Brijbasis arrived there. Why did he tell Rohini? Rohini's the mother of Balaram. Why did Balaram tell Rohini not to go? So Balaram was the last person to arrive there at Kaliyavada. And when he arrived there, he saw that all the residents, everyone in the village of Vrindavan, was gathered there on the river. Because Krishna was their life. Still to this day, in the villages in India, Krishna is the life of the village. Many times, I love going to small villages in India and in Orissa. We go many times, I have many friends in a small village in Jagat Singhpur district in Orissa, a small village called Gadai Giri. And you go there and you start doing Krishna Kirtan. All the other villagers come. They become very, very happy. Every house you go to, they have pictures of Krishna. They have a Tulsi stump in the front. Their houses are very beautiful. They're made out of mud. But the houses are very, very clean. And people are very, very happy, very, very peaceful. You'll notice this interesting point. I do a lot of traveling all over the world. And wherever you go in the world, the cities are always filthy dirty. The cities are always full of crime. They're full of anxiety. And they're full of garbage. And the further away that you go from the city, the more that you find people are peaceful. There's no garbage. There's no mental illness. People are better off. Wherever you go, whether it's South America, or whether it's Russia, or whether it's India, or Africa, wherever you go, the further away you get from the city, it's cleaner. And the more in the cities, it's filthy, filthy, dirty. So the Brijbasis, all the villages, they came there because their life and soul was Krishna. Krishna's a life, in India it's considered, he's the life of the village. In Gadagiri, this village, and practically every village in Orissa and West Bengal, they have kirtan groups. And two or three times a month on certain auspicious days, they'll do 24-hour kirtan. The whole village comes together and they chant Hare Krishna all night long. And they have dramas, different dramas, especially they do this during the summertime when it's like 40, 45 degrees and it's so hot. The drama troops come and they do these dramas, Krishna's pastimes, Ramachandra's pastimes. And they stay up all night long. The drama starts about 11 o'clock at night and it finishes about 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. And all the village is like, for them it's like television. They just love it. And it's such a wonderful thing in a drama like that because again, everyone comes together. Everyone comes together around Krishna. So when the Brijbasis all arrived there, they became so disturbed. They looked out in the water and they saw there was Krishna with Kaliya coiled around him. And they immediately they asked the boys, did Kaliya grab Krishna and drag him into the water? Did Krishna jump into the water? Was this his idea? Or was this your idea? Was this the idea of some of the boys? They were asking like this. And then suddenly they realized the boys weren't saying anything. And then the Brijbasis, the residents of that village, they looked at the boys and they saw the boys were all unconscious. And they couldn't answer anything. And then Krishna's father, Nanda Maharaj, and the other Brijbasis, they arrived in a state of shock. And the women, they fell down on the ground like creepers that are poked by a high wind. And everybody was laying in all different directions. And Nanda Maharaj, Krishna's father, he started crying and calling out, my darling son, why did you do this? Please come back to us. Come back to us. And everyone around him, they were falling unconscious and lamenting. Mother Yashoda, Krishna's mother, fainted and fell on the ground. And then she regained external consciousness and she stood up. And then she started to run into the Jamuna River to be with her son. It said that when the gopis, the young girls of Braj, who loved Krishna so deeply. When they came there, the tears from their eyes made the roads and everything muddy. They were just crying and crying in separation from Krishna. And they were also falling unconscious. And then again they would regain consciousness. And all the Brijbasis, they decided, we have to enter into the Jamuna. We have to be with Krishna. We have to rescue Krishna. And Balaram, Krishna's elder brother, he stopped them. He stopped them in three different ways, as described by Sanatana Goswami. Some of them, he had to grab a hold of them. Hey, don't go. And some of them, he spoke words. He said, don't do it. Don't do it. And with others, he just glanced at them. And they understood, I can't go into the river. At that time, Balaram, he began to call out to Krishna. Now this whole time, Krishna, he's in the coils of Kaliya. He's in the middle of the Jamuna River. And he's seemingly oblivious to what's going on with the cowherd people of Vrindavan. So at that time, Balaram, he began to call out to Krishna. Sanatana Goswami, he describes Krishna's words. Ete nevaikunta nivasi parishada navamaraste nachayadava api goloka loka bhavadeka jivana nashyam chakshakya bhagavan mahitatum. He told him, Balaram told Krishna, hey Krishna, these aren't your devotees in Vaikuntha, that part of the spiritual world where everything is very, very opulent. These aren't the forest monkeys who lived with you when you came as Ramachandra. These aren't the members of the Yadu dynasty. These are your dear devotees of Vrindavan. And they don't have any other life than you. Goloka loka bhava eka jivana. Eka jivana. You're the only life of them. Nasantya akshaya. They're being destroyed. They're going to die. And there's nothing I can do to save them. Balaram, he told Krishna, pranayava yukta nabhavanti yavat tavad vinodam karuna tvajaitam krishnan yata goshta janaika bando gantasi shokam midulasubhava. He said, O gentle-hearted Krishna, give up this game before your devotees die. Otherwise, Krishna, we have such a soft heart. You're the only friend of the cowherd people of Vrindavan. If you don't stop this game now, your gentle heart is going to be broken. And so, it was at that moment that Krishna broke free from the coils of Kaliya. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he comments, he says that Krishna told Kaliya, the snake, he said, you showed me your strength. Now I'm going to show you a little of my strength. And Krishna began to expand himself a little bit. And then he broke loose from the coils of Kaliya. And at that time, Krishna, he said, Kridan anu panisasa yuta kagendro. Krishna began to playfully circle around Kaliya. And the Bhagavatam says a very confusing thing about this pastime. It says that because, it says, evam paribhana hotojasam. Ojasi means a strength. And hatha means to destroy. So evam paribhrama, from that paribhrama, the Lord's, Krishna's moving around Kaliya, Kaliya lost his strength. But Krishna was going in the opposite direction. Now Kaliya, try to understand this, Kaliya is so powerful. How is he going to become weak if someone just goes the other direction? You ever see a wrestling match where one wrestler goes the opposite direction of the other wrestler and the other one says, okay, I've lost my strength because you're going the opposite direction. It doesn't make any sense, does it? But all of this has some deep purport. Balaram, as we mentioned, he's known as Adi Guru, the original guru. And Kaliya represents criticism. And that Kaliya Radha, Radha means the heart. Means like our own heart in Vrindavan. And the Vrijvasis, when they saw the situation of Krishna, they decided, we have to go in, we have to fight with Kaliya. But Balaram is the Adi Guru. He said, no, don't go. Why? Why did he say that? You may say, because they would die in the poison. Yes, but there's also a purport to it. And next question, why is it that Krishna was going in the opposite direction of Kali and Kali lost his strength? There's a very interesting description I'd like to share with you from the English writer and philosopher Aldous Huxley. Very profound words he says. Listen carefully. It has to do with criticism and fault-finding. The effects that follow the constant and intense concentration upon evil are always disastrous. Those who crusade not for God and themselves, but against the demons and others, they never succeed in making the world better. No man can concentrate his attention on evil, or even the idea of evil, and remain unaffected. To be more against the demon than for godliness is exceedingly dangerous. Every crusader is apt to go mad. He's haunted by the wickedness that he attributes to his enemies. That wickedness becomes a sort of part of him. This is a statement of Aldous Huxley. Now, if we turn to the Vedic literatures, the scriptures of India, we see some very similar statements. Those of you who know Mahabharata, Vidura, the wise Vidura, went to Dhritarashtra, and he tried to tell him, don't fight against the Pandavas. Don't be envious of them. And he told them, this is Udyoga Parva, chapter 34, text 74 of Mahabharata. Vidura told Dhritarashtra, Akrosha Parivada, Bhyam Bihim Santyadi, Aguda Budam, Vakta Papam Parate, Kshamamano Vimuchite. Krosha means anger and poisons, like Kaliya. Kaliya is full of poison, he wants to kill everyone. And that Kaliya demon represents fault-finding and criticism. And this is a great obstacle for us to establish our community. It's a great obstacle for us to on our journey to the eternal home in the spiritual world, a village of Vrindavan. Translation. The ignorant persons, they try to injure wise persons by malice and backbiting, by criticism. But by doing so, the critic, the person who criticizes, he takes the wise person's sins. Interesting thing. He takes the wise person's sins, which the wise man gives up by kshamamano vimuchite. Vimuchite means he becomes free from. Kshama means forgiveness. By forgiving that person, that rascal, then he gets free from his bad qualities. Those bad qualities, they go to the critic. Critics, in that sense, are really our friend. There's a nice saying I heard from the Dalai Lama. Dalai Lama, he said that don't be upset when someone comes to and opposes you in your spiritual life. He said, because if there's no obstacles, if no one criticizes you, how will you ever learn the good quality of tolerance? Tolerance is such an important quality. And if we don't have tolerance, how can we practice spiritual life? And the next two chapters later, in the same section, the Mahabharata, it says another interesting thing about criticism. Akrushyamano na akrushyan, manya eva titikshita, akrushtaram nidahati sukitam chasavindati. If someone criticizes you, don't criticize them back, ni mai. Right? If your brother says some bad things about you, don't criticize them back. Why not? Because the pain that you feel when someone criticizes you, if you tolerate that, that pain will consume the critic. And then what happens, if you tolerate that, all the good punya, the good pious consciousness and deeds of that person, the critic, comes to you. All of your bad things go to him, and all his good things come to you. Aldous Huxley hit it right on the head. If we meditate on evil, if we appoint ourselves the reformer, the self-appointed reformer of other people, I'm going to drive out all the evil, then you end up becoming evil when we meditate on it and meditate on it. So what did Balaram do? He stopped the Vrijbasis. Don't enter into this river. Don't you criticize also. When you see someone criticizing, don't you jump into the same water of poison and start criticizing also. You'll die. You'll die spiritually. And Krishna, he made Kali awake. How? By going in the opposite direction. Indicating the same exact points here. There's another nice verse in the Brihan Naradiya Purana. Which describes a similar thing. That for those persons who are always, who are Papa Gananam, the verse, the Sanskrit says, Papa means sins, and Ganana means someone who writes it down. Someone's going around, yeah, did you see this guy? I said, he was eating prasadam in the bathroom. Bad, very, very bad thing. And you go around writing down everybody's bad qualities. You see, in this world, everyone needs to have a job. Krishna in the Gita says that you have to work. Everybody has to do something. So, really, we have two choices in a broad way. We have two different courts that we can work for. You can work for the first court, which is the court of Yamaraj. And there's a fellow named Chitragupta. And Chitragupta, he keeps a book, and he writes down all the bad things that everybody did. Just see, Nimai was pulling his brother's hair, and was doing this thing and this thing. Well, Chitragupta has a book, and he writes down all the things. He has one book just for Nimai. All the bad things that Nimai has done to his brothers. He writes it all down. So we can work for Chitragupta also. Yeah, I saw that guy doing this thing, that thing. You can work for that court. Or there's another court you can work for. And that's the court of Nityananda Prabhu. And the poet Krishnadas, he sings. Darshi. He doesn't see any fault. And that's why he's Mora Prabhu. He's my Prabhu. Because I have a lot of problems. So I figure he's a good person to go to. If we work in his court, that means we also have to become Adosha Darshi. And Srila Prabhupada writes in one purport in Madhya Lila, Chaitanya Charitamrita, he says, the qualification of a Vaishnava is that they're Adosha Darshi. They don't see faults in others. This is our qualification as an individual, and this is what's required in a community. If we want to establish Vrindavan, don't just run around finding fault with everyone else. So we have two choices in our life. You can work for this court or that court. You can work for the court of Yamaraj and write down all the nonsense things that Nimai does to his brothers and see the faults in everybody else. Or you can work for the court of Nityananda Prabhu and don't see anyone's faults. Now these two courts, you should know one thing about them. It's very dangerous to work for the court of Yamaraj. Because if you have any faults, you're in big trouble. But working for the court of Nityananda Prabhu is very wonderful. Because although we may have so many faults, he's so very, very forgiving. And so Kaliya, in this way, he lost his strength. And then the Bhagavatam describes that Unatta Amsam, that Krishna, at that time, Anamyata Prithu Sahasa Aruda, Krishna pushed down Kaliya's hoods, and he jumped up on top of Kaliya. And Akila Kala Adiguru Nanarte, that Krishna, who is the Adiguru, the original Guru, he began to dance. And all the different demigods, the devatas, the gods in the higher heavenly planets, they saw this thing. And they came there with the Dundubi drums and different things, and they began to play. Krishna began to dance. Dik-tan, 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 dik-tan. And Krishna was dancing back and forth with all these hoods of Kaliya. And every time Kaliya would raise another hood to try to bite Krishna, and Krishna would jump up and stomp his foot down on that hood. And Kaliya's head would go down, another hood would come up, and Krishna would jump on that hood. But he did it. This master of all dance and the origin of all arts, Krishna began to perform the most wonderful dance on the heads of Kaliya. And an amazing thing is described at that time, that Krishna reached out his hand and he took the hand of the gopis and he brought the gopis up on the hoods of Kaliya and they began to dance the Ras Leela, like we see in the back painting again, on the hoods of Kaliya. Now you might ask an interesting question. How is it that Krishna is performing pastimes with his young girlfriends in front of his parents? Sanatana Goswami replies, he says that they were so stunned. Nandamaraj and Mother Yashoda, they were just standing there in shock. And they couldn't understand what was going on. And in this way, Krishna began to perform a Ras Leela of all the gopis on the heads of Kaliya. And then, it said that the Nandapatnis, the wives of Kaliya, they came and they prayed to Krishna. They put their children ahead of them. And they said, Krishna, look, we know the guy's really bad. But we can see now in his face, when you're dancing on his hoods, that the poison is going away. And we can see that Kaliya, although it's a little hard for him to think about things right now, because Krishna's jumping on his head everywhere, that Kaliya was having a change in consciousness. Previously, the wives were thinking, it'd be really good if this guy just dies. And then we can do our bhajan, we can practice our spiritual life without this rascal husband being here. But now they saw, actually there's some hope. Kaliya, he's becoming a devotee. Because of the power of Krishna's lotus feet on the heads of Kaliya. So then the ladies, they thought, we should say some prayer for you. And they started appealing to Krishna. Sometimes for really wicked men in this world, that's their only hope. If their wife comes and puts in a good word for them, for the Lord. So they began to offer different things to Krishna. They had so many different jewels and nice silk things. They offered Krishna so many cloths. And Krishna took those cloths and he tied them in knots. And he put them through, Kaliya had, he put a ring in the nose of Kaliya. And he put those cloths through the ring. And then with his left hand, he started riding Kaliya like a horse down the Jamuna River. And with the right hand, he was playing on his flute. And Sanatana Goswami says that sometimes Krishna, when he goes to Mathura, he goes on a Kurish chair, but sometimes he rides on Kaliya. And he goes to see Kamsa in that way. So then at that time, Krishna told Kaliya, you have to leave Vrindavan. You have to go away. So, it's an interesting thing I found studying this. Why did Krishna drive him away? All of our acharyas and commentaries in this pastime, they pretty much all describe that Krishna gave lots of mercy to Kaliya. Krishna's mercy on Kaliya was astonishing. But I read the passage and I thought, no, I don't agree. How is it mercy? He told Kali to leave Vrindavan. Why did he tell him to leave Vrindavan? He gave him so much mercy. On the heads of Kaliya were the marks of Krishna's footprints. Amazing thing. He did get a lot of mercy. But how can I accept that it's real mercy if Krishna's telling him to leave Vrindavan? Why did he do that? Bhaktivinoda Thakur comments in one place. He says that the reason why Krishna told Kaliya to leave was although Kaliya had become purified, although Kaliya had become a devotee, Kaliya had one fault. Kaliya hadn't taken shelter of any devotees to Vrindavan. And if we want to enter into the spiritual world, into that eternal realm of Vrindavan, that wonderful village of Krishna, we have to make friends with the people there. We have to take shelter of something. Kaliya didn't do that. He got some mercy of God. That's nice. But he didn't get the mercy of God's devotees. And so he had to leave Vrindavan. But how is it described that that's mercy? I wasn't very satisfied. I don't know, maybe 10 years ago, I spent a long time researching this pastime from different commentaries and Bengali and Sanskrit books and so many things. And I made a presentation at the Govardhan Retreat in Braj about it. And we reconciled so many different questions in the pastime. But there was one question that I didn't know the answer to. And I was feeling a little frustrated. The one question that I had that I couldn't understand, how can you say it's mercy to drive Kaliya out of Vrindavan? How can you? And our acharyas, they're all saying that. You can't argue with them. But how can you say it's mercy? So I thought, anyway, I have no answer. But at least what I'll do in the last session, I'll speak this to the devotees. Maybe somebody has some idea. I'll speak, and even if they don't have an idea, it'll make them think. Because that's an important thing. We should begin to think about what we're doing, why we're doing things, and different pastimes of Krishna. That morning, I went out by Govardhan Hill, and I was chanting my japa, Hare Krishna japa, and suddenly, the answer came to my mind. And I spoke it that morning in that last session, and all the devotees were very happy, but I still had one doubt, because this was just my idea, and I wanted to get it confirmed by some higher authority. So I went to see one disciple, Srila Prabhupada, a very senior devotee, very special exalted Vaishnava. His name is Radha Govinda Maharaj. He's been studying the Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavatam, since he was like 5 years old. He's an old man now. He's amazing. He knows the Bhagavatam so well. And so I went to him and I said, Maharaj, I don't understand. How can we say that Krishna gave Kaliya mercy when he drove him out of Vrindavan? How is that mercy? I asked the same question. I didn't tell him how I resolved it, the answer that I gave. But I was very, very happy when his answer, he gave the exact same answer that I gave. I said, okay, so here's my answer. That in the same way, the Srila Prabhupada, he brought all the devotees to Vrindavan. And when the devotees were in Vrindavan, but then he told them, now you all have to leave. Wonderful Vrindavan. And you go back to Scotland, where it rains forever, and it's always cold, and miserable. And it's not as happy a place as Vrindavan. You go back and you preach. And this is, in effect, what Krishna wanted Kaliya to do, because he told Kaliya that you go back to Ramanakadweep, to his place. Now, this is an interesting thought here. Kaliya, that's where he was from. He's a homeboy, we would say, in America. He's from Ramanakadweep. Now, if you've gone for a long time, you've lived in Kruna Bhavan for a long time, Krishna came with you for 10 years, and you go to Mayapur or Vrindavan, and you're gone for a few years, and then you come back to Kruna Bhavan, what does everybody do who's here? What do? You ask her, so what's been going on? How you been doing? Well, tell us the news, right? So 100% sure, this is what's going to happen when Kaliya went back to Ramanakadweep. He was gone for a few yugas, thousands and millions of years. So when he went back to Ramanaka Dweep, they're all going to ask him, so tell us, what's the news? And then what's Kaliya going to say? Sit down, I have a story to tell you. There's a place called Vrindavan. And there's a wonderful, wonderful boy named Krishna. And he's going to start speaking Krishna Leela. Now here's another interesting point. Those of you who know some shastra, know some tradition of this pastime, who goes to Ramanaka Dweep every day for lunch? Garuda. That's kind of like his McDonald's or something. Fast food. He goes there, and Garuda is a non-vegetarian Vaishnava. It happens sometimes, Hare Krishna. He likes to eat snakes. But they have this deal worked out. He gets to go there every day, and he eats a few, couple of the snakes. That's his lunch. So what's going to happen, Kaliya is going to go there, 100% sure, the residents will say, Kaliya, hey, we haven't seen you so long, what's going on? Kaliya is going to start speaking about the pastimes of Krishna. And who's going to come? Garuda. And Garuda also likes to hear Krishna's pastimes. So he's going to start listening to hear. And this is the result of Krishna Katha. When we come together and we hear Shundatam Svakata Krishna Punya Shavana Kirtana Vidyanti Shoya Bhadani Vidanuti Suritsatam, our hearts become purified by hearing this kind of katha. An enmity that may be there between different people, it goes away. If we keep Krishna katha in the middle of our community, in the middle of our village, then all those problems and anxieties and things, they go away. Now, I'd like to ask a few other questions, if we can. Is that all right? Everybody, about this pastime. All right, question number one. If Kaliya was such a bok badmas, such a rascal, and his wives are really nice, they're nice devotees, why did they marry that guy? That's question number one, right? Kaliya is a big demon. You think it's hard, being, dear ladies here, being married to your husbands. It's a lot harder for the wives of Kaliya. He's really a poisonous guy. Why did they marry him? Question number two. What is the significance of Vina Ramena? Balaram didn't go. Why didn't Balaram go at this particular time? Question number three. Why wasn't Kaliya killed? Krishna killed so many demons. Kaliya did terrible things. He killed the boys. He killed the calves. Why didn't Krishna kill Kaliya? Question number four. How is it that Kaliya got the good fortune to get Krishna's feet on his head? That's pretty good. Question number five. There's a story you may know. I'm jumping ahead, trying to make things a little short. That Kaliya had a great fight with Garuda. Now, Garuda is very powerful. How is it that Kaliya survived his fight with Garuda? Okay, that's our next question. Question number six. How is it that Kaliya got the good fortune to live in Vrindavan? He was standing in the water of the Jamuna for millions of years. How is it that he was able to do that? In one book called Hari Bhakti Ratna Prakash, which is written by Raghava Pandit, it says there that it was Krishna directly who chastised Kaliya and not Vishnu. This is a little technical point for some of you who know some more esoteric philosophy. Krishna doesn't kill the demons in Braj, but it's a Vishnu expansion inside of him that does. But in this case, according to Raghava Pandit, it was directly Krishna who chastised Kali and not Vishnu. Why? Okay? And then our other question about Vrindavan. So should we try to answer these questions now? In a quick way? Okay, in the Brahma Vaivarta Purana, in the fourth canto, chapter 19, the same pastime is described there. And Kaliya there, he tells Krishna, after Krishna chastised him, Kaliya began to offer prayers to Krishna, and one of the things that Kaliya told Krishna was, Samprapyatvan manum brahman, ananta adyavadevahi tava tvad bhavanenaiva tvad bargo hum anugrahat. Oh my Lord, anugrahat, anugrah means mercy. I got so much mercy. Tvadvargoham, from your devotee. From who? From Ananta Sesh. He said, what kind of mercy did I get from him? Because of him, I've always been meditating on your lotus feet because I was initiated. Kaliya was an initiated devotee. Kaliya got initiation from Ananta Sesh. And he said, now by your mercy, I became part of your family. Okay, now this answers several of our questions. Why didn't Balaram go? You may know in the Mahabharata, for those of you who are familiar with some of the stories of ancient India, that during the fratricidal war between the Kauravas and the Pandavas, Balaram said, forget it, I'm not taking part in this. So Krishna, you can go, but I'm not. Why did Balaram say that? Because Balaram loved Bhimasen. Bhimasen, the brother of Arjuna, the brother of Yudhisthira. He loved Bhima. Bhima was one of his students. But there's another student that Balaram had that he loved also, and that was Duryodhan. Because a teacher, he loves his student. Even though Duryodhan was a big badmash, big rascal. Still, Balaram loved him, and he couldn't talk it. He knew, definitely Duryodhan is going to lose. He's a real rascal, real nonsense. He's going to lose, but I just can't, I don't want to be there. I can't tolerate it. So also, Balaram knew, Kaliya is going to be chastised by Krishna. I don't want to see this. So Balaram, he didn't go that morning. The third answer is that Kaliya was a devotee, and this is why he was able to enter into the Jamuna. This is why he was able to stay there so long. This is why Krishna put his feet on his head. This is why Krishna didn't kill him. Because he took initiation previously from Ananta Sesh. And the second reason, his wives were nice devotees. Now what about his fight with Garuda? The Brahmavivarta Purana describes that during that fight, Garuda came and said, hey, let's go, you and I, right now. They had their big fight between Kaliya and Garuda. How was it that Kaliya survived? It said there, Smitva Haripadambo Jam Kaliyo Yudhirane Muhuttam Chatyo Yudham Bhavuritaiva Dharanam. They fought for one Muhurta, for 45 minutes. They fought with each other. Terrible, terrible duel, but the whole time he was fighting. Smitva Haripadambo Jam. Kaliya was thinking about Krishna. He was reciting his mantra. And because that mantra is so powerful, Yo mantra Saguru Saksha Yo Guru Sahari Swayam, that mantra is non-different from Krishna, non-different from Gurudev. Krishna's present there in that mantra. Kaliya was able to survive that. Now, if Kaliya was so powerful by chanting Krishna's name, why didn't he defeat Garuda? That's another question. Kaliya answers this. Mamcha bhaktam apakvam va vigyaya gurudaswayam desha duram chinyakaram chakara dhrida bhaktiman. That because Garuda is dhrida bhaktiman, he's a better devotee than me. He's more elevated than I am. And because of that, I couldn't defeat Garuda. And Garuda just drove me away into the Jamuna. Now, here's another question we didn't ask yet. But why did Balaram tell Rohini to stay back? Why did he tell someone else to stay back? Why Rohini in particular? According to the Garga Samhita, another literature, during the Swayambhuva Manvantara, long time ago, there was one sage. His name was Vedashira Muni. And he was a descendant of Bhrigu Muni. And he did penance in the Vindhya Mountains. And one day, another rishi came there. His name was Asvasira Muni. And he decided he was going to stay there. And Vedasira Muni got really uptight about it. What do you think you're moving into my ashram for? This is my place. You can't do any austerities here. Just like sometimes we see two brahmacharis quarterly in the ashram. So this Vedasira Muni and Asvasira Muni, they began to quarrel amongst himself. And Asvasira Muni, he became angry when Vedasira Muni told him, you can't stay here. So Asvasira Muni, he cursed him. He said, this place belongs to Mahavishnu. It doesn't belong to you or me. This is Krishna's temple. You're angry for no reason. You hiss like a snake. So you become a snake. Krishna. You become a snake. And you're always going to be afraid of Garuda. And Vedasira said, yeah, well, I can also curse you, buddy. Right? And so you become a crow. Right? And so he became the crow known as Kapabhushundi. And Asvashira Muni, he cursed Vedasira. Vedasira became Kaliya. And so at that time, the two of them were a little depressed, just like sometimes two boys, they start fighting or something, and then they realize this is really stupid. Why are we fighting about this? And they feel bad. They apologize to the mother. Do you apologize sometimes like that, Himan? You feel bad sometimes when you fight? Yeah? That's good. Is that true? Yeah? Good advice. So then at that time, those two sages were there, feeling a little depressed, and Vishnu showed up, and he said, you're both equally devoted to me, you're both great devotees, you're like my right hand, my left hand. He said, look, I can make my words false. There's a reason why Krishna says in the Gita, he tells Arjuna, you tell people that my devotee will never perish. Why did he tell Arjuna to do that? Because they may not believe me. Because sometimes Krishna breaks his word. Krishna promised, I won't pick up a weapon in the battle of Kurukshetra. But when Bhishma Dev started defeating Arjuna in the battle, then Krishna decided, forget it, I'm breaking my promise. And he picked up a wheel and he went to attack Bhishma Dev. And Bhishma Dev was very, very happy. Bhishma Dev wanted to behave in such a way, fight so hard, that Krishna would have to break his promise. And from this we see that for Krishna, his devotee is greater than his own promise. So Krishna told these two rishis, I can make my words false, but I can't make the words of my devotees false. So Vedasira, you're going to become Kaliya, but I'll come, don't worry, I'll put my feet on your head. And Asvashira, don't worry, you'll become a crow, but you'll become Kakabhushundi. Who's Kakabhushundi? You know? Someone know who Kakabhushundi is? He spoke the Ramayana. He was a crow, but he saw Ram Lila and he spoke the Ramayana. Very wonderful devotee. There's many, many different questions. So, why did Balaram keep Rohini back? In the Garga Sanhita, it said that during the Chakshusha Mandantara, the Japani Daksha, he gave his 11 beautiful daughters in marriage to Kashyapa Muni. And it's described there, Tasham Kadrushchaya Shrestha Saidyaiva Rohini Smita, that amongst them was his daughter whose name was Kadru. And that Kadru became Rohini, the mother of Balaram. Now Kadru, she's also the mother of snakes. Tesham Vedasira Nama Kaliyo Bhud Maha Fani. And one of her children, Kadru, was Kali. So that same Kadru, who's a mother of Kaliya, she came again in Krishna Leela as Rohini. And so maybe this is the reason why Balaram said, hey mom, don't go. You have to stay back. You stay back. Because Rohini's going to become very disturbed if she sees her son Kaliya from a previous life being chastised by Krishna. So we mentioned so many different meanings of the word Kaliya. Kaliya, for those of you who weren't here, Kala means black, Kala means night, Kala means iron, Kala means to criticize and defame other people. And the word Iya, the suffix Iya, means someone who has these kind of qualities. So Kaliya means someone who has these qualities of criticism, the harshness, they're like a black snake. Kala also means a black snake. But Kali also has another meaning. Because you see, Kala is also a name for Krishna. And Kaliya, another meaning is that personality to whom Krishna belongs to. It has a happy ending. And for all of us, this is a very relevant thing. We want to establish Vrindavan villages. But to establish a Vrindavan village, it means we have to drive out the poison of criticism of each other. And we have to establish Krishna there. And we can't do this on our own. We can't fight against the critics. If we try to fight against the critics, as Aldous Huxley said, as the Mahabharata said, As Anaradiya Purana said, if we try to drink that poison, we'll die ourselves. Don't try to take the position of the self-appointed reformer. Rather, the best thing is we go the opposite direction. We take shelter of Krishna. We forgive that person. We take shelter of Krishna's names. And that person will automatically become defeated. And if that person is there, a very poisonous person, and they've not taken shelter of any of the devotees in the community, Krishna will push them out. They can't stay. They won't be able to stay there. And sometimes we're also driven out because we're envious Kali-like persons. But that's okay. If Gurudev tells us, and you go back, and you preach, you speak about Krishna. So in that sense, for Kaliya, there was no separation from Krishna. He was with Krishna because he was preaching, because he was remembering Krishna and speaking with other people about Krishna. So just as yesterday we told this story about Govardhan Dharma Leela and explained many different aspects of community building within that pastime. Also in this pastime, Kaliya, Dhamma Leela, there's also many lessons, valuable lessons for community and how we can come together, how we can overcome this great obstacle on our path to our eternal home of Vrindavan. This terrible obstacle of criticism and pride, hurting other people. If we have this kind of criticism in our communities, people will die. And the spirit of Vrindavan will die. So we have to drive that out. It has no place in our communities. So I'd like to stop there. What's your time now? That's good. We have 15 more minutes. I'd like to see if anybody, before you have questions, if there's any reflections. Anybody, something that you heard, I really like that. I'd like to, I just want to comment on that. Or maybe it connected something else for you. And it also encourages me because then I know at least somebody wasn't falling asleep. Any reflections from anybody? Anything that you'd like that struck you? Krishna Kumar.
I'm really struck by this.
I like the part about the wives, how they pray for their husbands. I like that part.
You need a different wife for that. I'm always struck by this comment about how being driven out of Vrindavan and sent back to preach is mercy. It's something, it's a little difficult to relate to. It's kind of the kind of mercy that maybe we are not exactly aspiring for, but this is where our other
guys. Well, we can look at it another way also. It's not that we can just walk into Vrindavan, yo, here I am. Here, I'm ready. I have no place there. But what will my place be in Vrindavan? My place will be service. If I have something I can do there, so if we get the service, even if the services go away, that's very good. I'm sorry, yes and
no? No, this is what I wanted to say.
Huh?
This is what I wanted to say.
Oh, you wanted to say about
that
service.
That at least I have service, even okay. If it means outside, in that one sense, outside Vrindavan, but by remembrance and by being given that service, there's a connection there already. Yeah. So even if I don't have adhikar to stay there, or, you know, be with,
it's just like the kids, you know, in the West, as we were mentioning, we have this idea that you just play, you just eternally play, and there's never any responsibility, never any contribution. So sometimes we think, I'll go to the spiritual world and I'll just play. And it's all about me. If the whole spiritual world is revolving around me, that's not the spiritual world. The spiritual world is revolving around God, and I can enter there when I have service, when I have something to contribute. I can enter into a spiritual community when I have something to contribute. And I'm not just coming for my own salvation, for my own pleasure, my own enjoyment, my own escape from the material world, but when I can contribute something. Any other reflections from anybody, Prabhuji?
Just a sense of gratitude, because so much of what you've said today, you've learned this by studying all these different commentaries of different acharyas. And sometimes, and in one sense it's correct to say that Srila Prabhupada gave everything, but devotees haven't just rested on the laurels, they've really made this endeavour to make available all this information. to English-speaking devotees like ourselves or to other devotees around the world. So now we can dive into these pastimes through Srila Prabhupada's books, but then we can go deeper and deeper and deeper by studying these different commentaries. And
the Upanishads is a statement, Acharyanam Purusho Veda, that if you want to understand Shastra, you have to take shelter of Acharya. So our reading is not like the reading of someone in the university or something, but we read as a service. And we should read to serve Srila Prabhupada. Once some devotees came to Srila Prabhupada, they said, Prabhupada, we heard that you said we should not read the books of the previous Acharyas. And Prabhupada said, what? I never said that. I always say you should read again and again and again throughout his books. Prabhupada says we should. But what is our reading? If we think I'm going to get bhakti or something just by reading because I have some intellect or some ability to memorize things, we're wrong. Krishna in the Gita, he says that Raja Vidya Raja Guyam, this thing which is Raja Vidya, the topmost knowledge, which is Raja Guyam, the most confidential thing, he says it's Pratyak Savagamam Dharmyam. It has to be practically realized. It's not just a theoretical thing. And therefore, in our tradition, even if you can't read, no problem. You can get everything from the holy name if we have a proper attitude of service. So we may read. My Guru Maharaj told me, he said once that if someone asks you to speak, you have no choice, you must. And he also told us sometimes, if you can't quote Shastra, don't tell them you're my disciple. He's a little strong. He wanted us to, so this is part of my service. But it shouldn't be for me. And if we do that with a service attitude, then maybe it has some value. Thank you for your kind words. Any other reflection, Manji?
It has to do with this hope that even though we may have
something
for Krishna,
he'll
be kind to us.
Gives you hope about your husband.
It's just that, like, because Kali at one point was a devotee and he fell, and then Krishna still accepted him as his devotee, so Krishna's in front of what he never perishes.
You know, one of my favorite examples in this regard, another similar example, is Sugriv. Sugriv was a really close friend of Lord Chandra. They made a vow, there's a fire sacrifice, I'm going to be your friend, I'm going to take care of you, and I'm going to help you find Sita. And then all of a sudden the rainy season came, and nobody could go anywhere. So it's a long story, but Ramachandra had killed Bali. Bali had kidnapped Sugriv's wife, and he made Sugriv the king. And now the rainy season was there, Sugriv was the king, and life was good. And there was nothing for him to do. He had a bunch of she monkeys, you know? Maya Devi monkeys, I don't know. He was enjoying with them so many different ways, and he was drinking alcohol and enjoying so many different ways. And then the rainy season finished, and it was time. He had to go and fulfill his promise to Ramachandra. But Sugriv was intoxicated and was with all these beautiful beautiful monkey ladies. And they're also beautiful in their way. And he forgot all about his promise. But Lakshman became really, really annoyed. And you don't want to make Lakshman annoyed. He's a very angry person. He saw that Ramachandra, his brother, was suffering the separation from Sita. And so he went to have a few words with Sugriv. And he brought his bow with him. And twanged the bow, the whole earth shook. And Sugriv had realized, oops, I made a big mistake. And he came out and he begged apology. And Ramachandra forgave him. I find that such a wonderful example. So inspiring. Like Kali. There's some hope for us. Not that we should do nonsense things, but that even though we may slip and fall, if someone's sincere and they keep trying, Krishna will always protect them. Anything else?
Just that the pastime you just told in the translation that I read, because it reminds me of the story that you told yesterday, how when Indra went to apologize or went to beg forgiveness to Krishna, Surabhi went in front, and when Sugriva realized that Lakshman was coming, he sent his wife out. So it's like it's the same principle.
Very good. That's the way they do it. There's a benefit of being married.
Did you ask a question?
Yeah.
Yesterday, when you spoke about community development, you were saying one of the important things, you know, is like it's the gospel, it helps to build community because, you know, if there is some issue, problem, we can bring it up, you can discuss it and work it out, you know. And also today we spoke about criticism. So what is the difference? Because sometimes, you know, bringing out a problem can be considered a criticism as well. And, you know, some devotees, you know, necessarily want to hear it. And so what is the difference?
It's a really good question, because the very same words, someone may say the same exact words, but with two motivations. One person saying it, you know, to criticize and defame that person. The other person is saying the same exact words, word for word maybe, but with a mood to try to help them. And therefore Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that this mood is very, very important. But aside from the mood, it's also very important how we speak, how we conduct ourselves with each other, because we misunderstand things so much. I had a cartoon I saw once. There was a little girl. She's about 3 years old, 4 years old, and she's sitting on a swing set. And the swing next to her is empty. And the little girl was talking to the empty swing. And the little girl, what was she saying? Huh? My mother also has imaginary friends on something called Facebook. She said like that. So why are those kind of mediums like Facebook or internet, email, why are they so very, very difficult? Because we can't see each other. We can't see the body language. We can't see when we're saying something to someone, maybe we're saying it in a joking way. But they can't see your face, your body language, and they take it in a literal way. And that's why so many people now are leaving Facebook and so on, because it's just so much quarrel and misunderstanding. And then misunderstanding is poison. So we should be careful. If we do chastise someone, we may go and we put our arm around them. My dear brother, don't mind me saying this. We can say something to someone if they have some faith in us, and if we're saying it with some affection, some genuine concern for the person. It's so very, very important. And that's the difference between fault-finding and care. But we also have to see if I have the position for that, and if that person's going to listen to me. Many times, sometimes we've gone to someone and we said, you know, Prabhuji, you really shouldn't do like that. You shouldn't sleep while you're chanting japa, which doesn't work very good. And then some, what do you think? Leave me alone. Who do you think you are? I'm senior to you. I joined 2 weeks here before you did. What are you trying to tell me for? Don't say anything to them. Rather than that person, we have to try to speak to them through our own behavior. We have to create faith in them, because Ashradhanivimukhe Pashinvati is Chokpadesha Siva Nama Paratha. The Padma Purana says it's an offense to preach to someone who doesn't have faith in you. You can't. You can't say anything. So then what do? If they don't have faith in you, you have to do some hard work. Chastising them, correcting them, that's easy. Anybody can do that. What is the hard work? The hard work is to behave in such a way that they have faith in you. To be a person with such good character, who has such a soft heart and so much affection for the other person, that they have faith in you, and then they'll listen to you. So if they don't have faith, it means Krishna's trying to tell me something. I need to get it together. And I need to behave in such a way that they will have faith. There's two different things. Okay, anything else to say, Prabhuji?
You mentioned this principle that if someone is criticizing us, then rather than criticize them back, we should tolerate. And that by tolerating it, we get negative qualities, and then they get like a reaction for that. And I've heard devotees many times over the years kind of present this principle, and I've always had difficulty with it, because I've even seen devotees quite kind of relish the fact that if I just tolerate, then I'm going to get this person's good qualities and they're going to get some negative reaction. And I always kind of struggled with that, because why would a devotee even apply that principle?
Okay. Let me ask you a question. If someone has an attitude like that, someone relishes when someone comes and criticizes and thinking, yeah, I'm going to destroy this guy. I'm going to tolerate. Is that really tolerating? It's not really tolerating. It's another subtle form of envy when you get some pleasure to see someone else destroyed. So really, indirectly, what the verse is saying is that such a person who tolerates, they're also feeling sorry. They're feeling bad for that person. Just like Haridas Thakur, when the Muslims were beating him, trying to kill him, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to destroy all of them. But later he told Haridas, I couldn't do it. Why not? He said, because you were praying for them, to forgive them. He wasn't just tolerating. He was even going, please, please, forgive them. Don't hurt them. That's the movie. And when someone does like that, the person's good qualities will come to us. Not that we want that, and our bad things to go to them. But this is also part of life. It's that this indicates also the importance of tolerance. In the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, in one purport, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta describes that when a neophyte takes up spiritual life, what happens automatically is there's going to be some people who are going to come and criticize you. Just like there's a story. There was one man who was a wealthy man, and being a wealthy businessman means sometimes you step on other people's feet, you do some deals which are a little cutting edge, and you hurt people's feelings. But after some years, he became disgusted with material life, and he decided, I want to become a devotee, I want to become a sadhu. And so he left the village, left his business, and he went outside the village a little ways in the forest. He made a little hut, and he would sit there and chant Krishna's names and meditating. And all the villagers became very impressed with him. And everybody was glorifying him. He's a sadhu, such a good person. But there was one of his old enemies who was disgusted. That guy, give me a break. Come on. He's not a sadhu. He's putting on a show. He's completely bogus. And so finally he went to see him. And he started criticizing him. Oh, now you've become a big, big sadhu, haven't you? Everybody's praising. I know you. You rascal. You're not a sadhu at all. You're just putting on a show, trying to get people's respect. Nonsense. But that man who was chanting didn't respond. He just kept chanting. And the other person kept coming every day and criticizing him. Hey, I'm saying so many bad things about you. Are you a man or are you a woman? You're not having anything to say back? Finally, he spit in his face. And the man still didn't say anything, didn't do anything. He said, what kind of person are you? The next day he came. This is a little disgusting, excuse me. He passed urine on that sadhu. And the sadhu just kept chanting. And finally, the angry person, he said, look, man, what's the deal with you anyway, huh? I'm coming, I'm insulting you in every possible way, and you're just tolerating, you're not doing anything, what kind of person are you anyway? And then finally that sadhu spoke up. And he said, if you go to visit someone, and you bring them a gift, and the person doesn't accept the gift, what happens to it? He said, well, you get to keep it. Yeah. It's like that. You're coming with all this anger and things with me, and I'm not accepting it, so you get to keep it. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, he says in this way that when a neophyte begins spiritual life, definitely some people are going to come and criticize. They're going to say, what the hell are you doing? You got to shave your head, man. You're giving up material life. What are you doing? This is crazy. Don't do that. And they find fault with the devotees. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says, if that neophyte is not able to tolerate those harsh words, and if he responds and starts arguing back with them, then he's going to fall down. He won't be able to continue practicing spiritual life. So important is tolerance. But as you're evoking your comment, nice comment, that tolerance is more than just, I'm not going to punch him back, I'm not going to punch him back, but it's deep. It's something deep in the heart that I really tolerate. Because real tolerance doesn't mean I'm just controlling myself and punching him in the face. But real tolerance means that I forgive him. Otherwise, I'm not tolerating it. I can't tolerate it. I'm just clenching my teeth. So I'm wishing this guy would just drop dead sooner or later. I can't give up the anger. And that anger is still in me. And I'm not purified. Okay? Anything else, Esther? Mataji?
Kind of reminds me of Chaitanya Leela, how the devotees would come up with different things, but and they'd kind of petition Lord Chaitanya, even though they, at the risk of making her angry, they still petitioned on behalf of that devotee. So can you say something about that?
Sometimes, like once, there was a devotee of Gopinath Patanayak, and he was a great devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but he was a tax collector, and he was keeping some of the money, a lot of the money, for himself. He wasn't giving it to the king. It's a long story. But the king's eldest son became furious with him and decided to put him in a tanga. Tanga is like a rack where they drop him on some swords and they die a very miserable death. And so the devotees came to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and said, Gopinath Patanayak is on the tanga. You've got to do something. And Mahaprabhu said, what is it to me? Leave me alone. That's not my business. And the devotees kept coming, and Mahaprabhu said, okay, I'm leaving. Forget it. I'm getting out. I'm going to Alanath Brahmagiri. I'm not going to stay here if you're going to keep bringing me all these politics and things. So what does that mean? There's some purport to that pastime. That we don't approach Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or Krishna or Gurudev with politics. Some mundane thing. The second point is that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't actually neglect Gopinath Patanayak. But Gopinath Patanayak, he depended on the Lord. And because of his dependence on the Lord, it's a long story, but things worked out. He didn't forget Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Krishna. So sometimes the Lord puts us in such a situation to test us. We want some political answer. We want to go to the GBC or Gurudev or something and say, no, give us some legislation and solve the problem of legislation. But the problem is not solved with legislation. The problem is solved with Krishna Nam. The problem is solved with our consciousness, not with legislation. And it's only very shallow people who have faith that legislation is going to solve all the problems. Management is important. Legislation is also important, but it's not going to solve all the problems. The problems will be solved through Krishna Nama, Krishna Katha. Okay? So I think we should stop there. As I mentioned yesterday, it's a very dangerous thing to make Hare Krishna devotees hungry, especially Scottish Hare Krishna devotees. And we should stop there. Srila Prabhupada ki, Srila Bhaktivinoda ki, Go pray, Manandi. Go pray,
Manandi. Hare Krishna. Can you have one just before you go for prasada? I hope I don't embarrass Madhavananda Prabhu. Srila Prabhupada, he explained that our family business as his followers is to publish and distribute books. And publishing and distributing books does not just end with the publishing and distribution of Srila Prabhupada's own books, but he actually asked that all of his followers take up this practice of writing and publishing and distributing books. And just a show of hands, does anyone here feel inspired in any way today by having Madhavananda Prabhu's association? So one of the things that we should ask when we have the association of a very nice devotee is where do they get their knowledge, where do they get their inspiration, where do they get their potency? And this comes from their own guru. So Madhavananda Prabhu is a very wonderful devotee. He also has a very, very extraordinary and wonderful spiritual master, Srila Guru Govinda Maharaj, who sadly is no longer physically present amongst us, but we have the opportunity of learning about his life and teaching.